Hello again, I'm back. Bernie Miklas here with another Bernie Show video on my YouTube channel. Thanks for subscribing. We're rolling along. It's been wonderful. Love your comments. Really going to want your comments today after today's video. It's kind of random, a little surprise here thrown in, right? Well, I give the St. Louis Cardinals credit for an upcoming promotion. I really do. On Saturday night, September the 21st, they're having kind of a special theme night, and all kinds of good stuff is there, will be there. They're honoring the 1999 St. Louis Rams greatest show on turf. And there'll be a bunch of players there, and there's theme tickets and all this other stuff. There'll be autograph sessions. There'll be a kind of a VIP panel, all these good things. And when it comes to something like remembering and honoring one of the great St. Louis sports teams, obviously in the history of our town, and something that someone who was pretty much at every game, I was at every game that season, it was just an extraordinary experience. And we'll get into that in a second. But anyway, go to cardinals.com for that. Don't get mad that I'm plugging the Cardinals. I'm plugging the St. Louis Rams and the fact that those players and some of the coaches will be back for that. And they deserve to be applauded and recognized and honored. As I like to say, we know that it ended poorly here for the Rams in St. Louis. These players who are going to be gathering on September 21st at Busch Stadium, they had nothing to do with the bad stuff that went down. All right, this is to celebrate some incredible seasons of football in the NFL. I have to take you back. I'm going to, tell a couple stories, weave some stuff here. I got to take you back to 1998. That was obviously the year before the greatest show on turf, Rams, kind of just materialized and took over the NFL. It was unbelievable to contrast, as I go back in my memories, the 1998 Rams and how depressing it was. And to think that a year later, they would be lifting the Super Bowl trophy, the Vince Lombardi trophy, and then they would have a parade down Market Street, which is just, tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of people there. It was really something else. But in 1998, let me go back to that. That team under Dick Vermeil went 4-12, and they averaged about 18 points per game. Their offense was horrible, just absolutely horrible. I remember there was a game late in the season at Philadelphia, and it was a Rams road game, obviously, and it was a really big deal for Dick Vermeil because he was going back to Philly the first time as a coach of another team, and they love him in Philadelphia. He is an iconic figure in that town. He still is. So this is a game he wanted to win really bad, and it's a game that meant a lot to him. And Jim Thomas, and myself at Post-Dispatch, I was columns, he was a beat writer. You all know Jim Thomas. Not including broadcast people, like rights holders. The weird thing about that is Jim Thomas and me were the only two members of the St. Louis media there to cover that game because there was such a lack of interest and the team was so dull and the season was almost over. And then the only question hovering at that time: would Dick Vermeil be back for another season, or can they get him to change? Can they convince him to bring in a new coordinator and just do all these other things? And so it was an uncertain time, but it was a miserable time. It was a miserable time. I remember, and Jim Thomas will, verify this. I remember that night at the old Veterans Stadium in Philly. A lot of my friends in the Philadelphia media were just like, they couldn't believe it. It's like, St. Louis only has two media people here. We've never seen anything like this. Usually, the visiting team, the visiting city media is, going to have like, 8, 10, 12, 15, 20 media people. It's only two. Never seen anything like this. And I never saw anything like this. And you got to keep it in the context of 1999. What was to come? That night, it was so bad. The Rams lost Dick Vermeil. Poor Dick Vermeil. He lost 17-14. And I remember looking out on the field and watching some of the action, obviously, but it is a specific series, okay, of offensive series. And I turned to Jim Thomas and I said, My gosh, can it get any worse than this? You have Tony Banks, the quarterback, and he's handing off to June Henley, if you remember him, and he's throwing passes to JT Thomas. That was like their top wide receiver. So you had Banks handing off to June Henley and throwing it downfield or trying to JT Thomas. That was their offense, my friends. To think about this now, a year later, you had Kurt Warner at quarterback throwing to Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt and Marshall Faulk and Oz Akeem and Ricky Prohl and Roland Williams and Tony Horn. And I mean, on and on and on and on. And of course, you had Marshall Faulk, you know, carrying the ball on the ground. He's handing it off, flipping it to Marshall Faulk all the time. One of the great, great running backs in the history of the league. And it just shows you, it's just remarkable to think back on that. It's like how quickly things can change. I mean, this is just looking back on it. Yeah, I don't need to pinch myself because I was there and it really happened. But it's still one of the damnedest things I've ever seen in sports, let alone St. Louis sports. Because, like, look, the Blues took forever to win a Stanley Cup, all right? And that was an extraordinary thing. That was one of the sweetest things that's ever happened in St. Louis. And Blues fans deserve every moment of joy. And so many people waited, just about 50 years for that. But the Blues also had some really great teams. And I know there were some bad years, don't get me wrong. But the 2019 team, it wasn't like a situation where they were coming off of a season as bad as what the 98 Rams had. So in other words, the Blues were always building towards something. The 2019 Stanley Cup was certainly a surprise, but it was not like a shocker other than the fact it was stunning that they finally won a Stanley Cup. And it was one of the wonderful things, most wonderful things I've ever seen in our terrific town. But to think about, you go from Tony Banks, June Henley, and JT Thomas, and no offense to those gentlemen, they were trying to do what they could. You go from that to what was at that time the greatest single season offense in the history of the league in 1999. You go a year later from that awful night in Philly, and in 1999, you had a couple of MVPs. You know, Kurt Warner would win two, Marshall Faulk would win one. You had, let me count this now. In 1999, there were four Hall of Fame players and one Hall of Fame coach. Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Orlando Pace, and Dick Vermeil are in the Hall of Fame, and Torrey Holt will be in the Hall of Fame if the voters can get their heads screwed on right. You also had, he wasn't a member of the 1999 Rams, but you also had Aeneas Williams, the outstanding cornerback and then safety for the Rams, who came along in 2001 to help them undergo basically a revival defensively, because the 2000 Rams had a horrible defense. They made the playoffs anyway because their offense was so great. So I look at the 1999 team, but I also put it in kind of that three-year phase. From 1999 through 2001, the greatest show on turf, they were 37-11 in the regular season. They won two NFC championships. They won the Super Bowl, should have won a second Super Bowl. And they had all these Hall of Famers doing these incredibly exciting things on the field. And, you know, it's to be able to watch and to go back into history, and it's 25 years ago. This is the 25th anniversary, and I'm glad the Cardinals are doing what they're doing, and I'm glad to have a chance to talk about the Rams. And I think I'll be talking about the St. Louis Rams with some random videos here and there, because I have some incredible stories from that time. But that group from 99 through 2001, that offense scored more than 500 points every season. Now, we have seen that happen since then. There have been teams that scored over 500. It's like, I'm not saying it's ho-hum, but it's more common now. It's not something just out of like the sky. It's like, I never thought I'd see a team score 500 points. The Rams did it when it wasn't common. The Rams did it 3 years in a row. In fact, over the 3 years in the regular season, they averaged nearly 33 points per game. I mean, you can make the case, and there would be other teams in the conversation, and this is not my purpose to get into a debate and like list, you know, the greatest offenses in the history of the league. But if you're going to have a conversation about the greatest offense over a 3 year period, especially, and one of the years, Trent Green played a lot of games at quarterback in 2000 because Kurt Warner had, you know, the broken pinky and he had all kinds of hand injuries or whatever. Their offense in 2000 actually scored more than they did in 99, and Trent Green played a lot of ball that year. But to be able to just the privilege of being able to watch that and write about it all the time and just see these things that are just utterly unforgettable, magical, stuff that you never thought you would see a St. Louis NFL team do. And I know that Don Coryell, Big Red, the St. Louis Football Cardinals, had their moments. They had an incredible offense in their own right, in their own time. But that team, unfortunately, you know, went to the playoffs three times and lost all three games. And Don Coryell was a genius, and Jim Hart was a hell of a player, and Terry Metcalf was a hell of a player, and Dan Dierdorf was a hell of a player. Mel Gray, I mean, on Jackie Smith, on and on and on and on and on and on, right? They just couldn't get to the promised land. The 99 Rams did, and the 2001 Rams almost did, and they're rolling up 500 points a season with all of these Hall of Famers on the field, and still one more to come in Torrey Holt. And I know I'm being redundant here, but you know, man, when you relive memories, you know, you just the same scenes keep playing out in my mind, and I don't think I've ever seen a turnaround, and I could be wrong. I certainly have never seen a St. Louis sports team turnaround to the bleakness and the despair and the defeat and the tedium of the 1998 Rams to what sprouted out of that in 1999. I mean, forget about it. I mean, it was just crazy that this sort of like happened. Well, how did it happen? John Shaw, the Rams, Jay Zigman and the Rams, they were running the franchise for Georgia Frontier. And I'm gonna have a Georgia Frontier video coming up, you know, at some point during this window, the 25th year anniversary, because some good stories about her too. But anyway, they convinced Dick Vermeil to get a new offense coordinator. And he was thinking about promoting one of his own guys, Mike White. And John Shaw and Jay Zimmitt gently said, hey, listen, we think this guy that used to work for us, he's the Redskins offensive coordinator. They work all the Redskins in. Mike March, you should at least talk to him. You should at least talk to him, Dick. You know, you would feel better about doing what you're going to do if you knew you interviewed a couple people that we think are really good. So they didn't say you have to hire him. So Dick Vermeil and Mike Martz got together and they hit it off. And Dick Vermeil was sold and he hired Mike Martz as the offensive coordinator. Now, say what you want about Mike Martz. And I know that, you know, the fact they lost that Super Bowl to New England, Super Bowl 36, I know that left a bitter taste in some mouths in our town. I get it. But Mike Martz's overall record was outstanding, but his work with this offense, there's nothing you can disparage about it. Even if you're looking to criticize something, there's absolutely nothing to disparage. They had the Hall of Fame quarterback. They had the Hall of Fame running back. They had the Hall of Fame wide receiver. They had a Hall of Fame left tackle, and Orlando Pace made it possible for the greatest show on turf to roll up all these points. Why? Because he was so good at left tackle that he could X out that whole area of the field. They never had to put a tight end to like extra protection on the left side. And remember, that's Kurt Warner's blind side, right? He could take care of that business all by himself. They never had to say, well, boy, we can't protect the blind side here. We're going to have to do something. Let's move a tight end over there. Let's put an extra tackle over there. No, he was able to blot out that, that pass rush on the right side, his left side, to give Kurt Warner, with all these empty backfields and these high risk passes, to give him the chance to make those plays downfield, make those throws, because he had time, because of Orlando Pace, he had a time to make those throws. And the rest, as we say, is history. And so I'll just never get over that. I mean, there were times during the season we were at these games and they're doing all these incredible things. And, you know, Jim Thomas and I, one of my best friends, we would just sit there and say, can you believe this? I mean, can you believe this? Anyway, let me get back to the story. So the first step was they convinced Dick Vermeil, or they nudged Dick Vermeil, and he's the one who hired Mike Martz. It worked out great, to say the least. The other thing is the Rams made the trade after 1998 for Marshall Faulk. I don't have to say more, do I? Right? Marshall Faulk opened up that entire offense. They drafted Torrey Holt in the first round of the 99 draft. He was terrific as a rookie. They had, I'm trying to think, Oz Akeem was a second-year player, I think. That, you know, some of the guys they had were getting, becoming more experienced and things of that nature. The other thing they did, because again, I don't go by a script, so I'm just remembering things. Isaac Bruce was injured in 98 a lot. He hardly ever played. He had a bad hamstring, and he ripped it. It was a legitimate injury. He took some heat locally. I'll never understand. Dick Vermeil was kind of crabby about it, I think, because, you know, Isaac couldn't get back on the field in 98. Well, they had a full blast, 100% healthy, maximum athleticism, performance, Isaac Bruce on the field in 99, which he did not have in 98. And the other thing, of course, is the story of Kurt Warner, one of the greatest sports stories ever told. And, you know, the Rams took a chance on him. They signed the former Arena League quarterback. They put him in NFL Europe. He played for Amsterdam. And they signed him to a contract. Charlie Army, the general manager of the team, led the way on that. And it was Kurt Warner. He had an interesting background. We would watch him on the practice field, but he wasn't getting many reps. He was like the scout team quarterback in 98 and 99. And we were like, you know, he throws a nice ball. But that's all you could say. Look, for anybody to sit here and like act like, oh, we knew he'd be great. No. So what happens in 1999 in the preseason, and the Rams were looking really good. They had Trent Green at quarterback. They signed him before the 1990 season. They also brought in Adam Timmerman as a free agent, who really, really, really settled down the interior of that offensive line. And they were humming along, and Trent Green changed the culture of that team. He really, truly did. His teammates, especially on the offensive side, you know, throughout the offseason workouts, throughout the, you know, the mini camps, throughout preseason, the training camps, he led by example, and he was always talking to guys, and he was setting a high standard, and they saw how he went at it and how professional that he was. And they were like, wow, you know, we get it now. We have a leader. We get it. And Trent Green would have done extraordinary things as the quarterback of the 1990 Rams too. But the Warner story is amazing, because Trent Green gets his knee blown out in the third preseason game. It was at the Dome. Rodney Harrison, of course, with a cheap shot tackle, went low on him in a preseason game. Are you kidding me? And Trent Green blows out his knee. So I'll never forget that night. It was a Saturday night, and I'll never forget being on the phone pretty late, pretty, pretty late, with John Shaw and Jay Zignet. And I said, all right, what's the deal? And they were just devastated. They thought their season was over. It's just like, we can't break the bad luck. Why does this happen to us? And they rebounded, they emotionally rebounded, but they were so distraught the night that happened. And they spent all night together, like talking about it. They couldn't get to sleep. They were so upset. And then in the middle of all that, Dick Vermeil was making a pitch He said, listen, I know Jeff Hostetler just retired, but I know him. I know his agent. We ought to try to talk him into coming in here. And Shaw and Zygmunt gave it some thought. And it's not like they told, you know, Dick, oh, forget that, right? But enter another figure, okay? Enter another important figure in all this. So when Dick Vermeil, and I don't blame him for wanting to bring in Jeff Hostetler, right? But when, so when Dick Vermeil was kind of pushing for Hostetler, here comes another voice. And this voice says, listen, you can say I'm wrong. You can think I'm being stupid, whatever. I'm telling you, there's something about this Kurt Warner. I'm hard on this guy in practice every day. I don't know if I've ever been harder on a player. And this guy is great under pressure. He can handle adversity. You can push him and push him and push him. And it actually makes him better. Nothing gets his confidence deflated. He throws a great ball. He's got a quick release. His accuracy is ridiculous. And no, he hasn't done it at the NFL level, but I think we got something here. We ought to give this kid a chance. You probably figured out who that was. That was Mike Martz, right? And he went to the mat for Kurt Warner, and Dick Vermeil trusted Mike Martz so much. He trusted his judgment so much that he said, you know, I think Mike's right. I think we ought to give this guy a chance because he's done nothing but impress us, even in practice only, but he's done nothing but impress us. So I'll never forget that night. That was the Sunday. That was the day after Trent Green went down. And just we thought, everybody thought, blew up the Rams season. They had something really special starting to build. Now they don't know who's going to play quarterback or if the quarterback could do it. I'll never forget. So the night after, that was the Sunday afternoon was the tearful press conference where, you know, God bless Dick Vermeil, by the way, where he I'm going to misquote it, but he was crying and he said, like, you know, talking about Kurt Warner, he said, we're going to rally around Kurt Warner, you know, and we're going to win or we'll be fine. I wish I would have memorized that and looked it up before I did the video, but I'm kind of doing this random. But anyway, so I remember that night, Jim Thomas and I were the last media people at Rams Park, and because we were both waiting for Kurt Warner. And Kurt Warner finally came out, and we got him outside the locker room. It was dark, except for the light on in the hall, and no one else was around, not even a coach. Well, they might have been upstairs. And Jim Thomas and I talked to Kurt Warner for about 15 minutes. And listen, it was only an interview, okay? But he was calm. He was poised. He was confident. He said all the right things. He pointed out that he had won championships in previous careers. And I remember thinking, and Jim felt the same way. He said, you know, this guy is remarkably self-assured about the situation. Is it? You don't detect any nervousness whatsoever, no anxiety whatsoever. So the night before the season opener, the Ravens were in town, and I was at Canetto's Pasta House with a few of my friends from Baltimore. And one of my friends, who had a great name, he still does, Vito Stellino, he said, oh, it's a shame. You know, Marshall Faulk's really good. You know, boy, the Rams had a chance, and boy, they don't have a quarterback now. That's a shame, blah, blah, blah. And I said, listen, Vito, Godfather, I'm not making any predictions. So let's understand what I'm saying here. But this guy might be pretty good. He might be pretty good. I wouldn't be surprised if he was pretty good. In fact, I wrote a column a few days, well, about the night that, the day after they lost Trent Green, I wrote a column. And even I said something like, I wrote a column that said, like, you know, let's rally around the Barnstormer, because that was the nickname of the Arena League football team he played on. Let's rally around the Barnstormer, give this guy a chance. And I wrote a column, and I was basically saying, you know, I'm intrigued by this guy. I want to see what he can do, because I think he's very confident, very self-assured. He's ready for this. And let's not prematurely write him off. So, no, I made no predictions other than having a feeling that, you know, with this offense, with this coach, all those weapons, he might be just okay. He might be fine. He might play pretty well. Well, did I think he was going to be win the 1999 Super Bowl MVP? Did I think he would be the 1999 regular season MVP and that he would throw for like a zillion yards? No, I didn't think any of that would happen. But it just shows you that some people in this world, some athletes in this world, until they get a chance, you just never really, really, really know. And I always think about, well, how many guys were there like Kurt Warner, who maybe if they just got not only a chance, but in the right situation, because the Rams situation was perfect for him. Him and Martz had a great bond. They were on the same page. The kind of offense Martz wanted to run with a lot of high-pressure throws where the quarterback's got to be calm, poised. He's got to be willing to take a hit. He's got a lot of empty backfields, limited pass protection, knowing where the ball should go, get it out, be accurate, hit these guys in stride. You know, Warner had those skills. We didn't know to what extent, but he had those skills. And I just remember that entire season, game after game after game after game after game, Fox doing something crazy. Warner's making crazy throws. Bruce is running loose and wild. And remember that big game they had to win where they beat the 49ers at the Dome? Bruce had three touchdown passes by halftime, and it was a blowout. And I'll never forget the late, great Bill Walsh came into the post-game news conference where Dick Vermeil was talking to us, and he ducked his head and he said, "You're going all the way, baby. Your team's going all the way." And Vermeil's laughing, and you know, and this wasn't all that. This was not late in the season. But Bill Walsh and Dick Vermeil were friends. Walsh, by that point, was a 49ers executive. He poked his head in the room. He interrupted Dick Vermeil's news conference, said, "You're going all the way, baby. I'm telling you, you're going all the way." And we're sitting there, and we're like, well, he's being nice to DV. But then again, this is pretty remarkable what's happening. So we know what happened after that, right? And I'll never forget that Super Bowl. First of all, I'll never forget the way they had to sweat that first home playoff game in the history of St. Louis NFL football. We're on the first play, Warner to Bruce, you know, whatever it was, 80 yards, and the route was on. They just destroyed the Vikings. And then everyone around the league, all the pundits were thinking, well, they're pretty, they're flashy, they're fun, they're entertaining, but are they tough enough? If you hit them in the mouth, will they fold? Well, the Rams answered that question in the NFC Championship game against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay gave them fits because they had great athletes on defense, and they were fast. It was a very fast defense. Plus, they had the interior pass rush in Warren Sapp, and they hit hard. I mean, it was a hell of a defense. You remember that game. Tampa Bay spent most of it beating the snot out of the Rams and the greatest show on turf. And the Rams couldn't crack the code, but the Rams kept fighting. They turned into street fighting men that day. And as you know, in a very low scoring game, it looked like they were going to go down. And then Warner throws that perfect pass to Ricky Prohl in the end zone to send him to the Super Bowl. Amazing. Just amazing. They proved a lot that day. They were more than just glitz and glamour. You wanted to get into a fight. You want to brawl. We can brawl with you. And they did, and Tampa Bay learned that lesson. The Super Bowl itself was almost like a blur. I still couldn't believe I'm sitting here. I covered a lot of Super Bowls, over 30 of them, but I couldn't believe that I'm actually covering a St. Louis NFL team in the Super Bowl. And I thought the Rams had a good chance to win. I wasn't like overly confident. I'm just talking about from a handicapping standpoint, because they had played Tennessee really tough during a regular season. They were down and almost came back and won the game. They weren't afraid of the Titans. The one thing I remember about that game, of course, is the last play when Steve McNair, you know, throw the Rams defense was gassed and it really looked like Tennessee was going to tie the thing up. And it was pretty amazing, that final play, because the Rams were on the ropes. They really were, because McNair and Eddie George had just tuckered them out, just pounded them into fatigue. And so that last throw decide the game. So McNair throws to Kevin Dyson, and Kevin Dyson gets, you know, almost immediately pounced on by Mike Jones, but Dyson's trying to reach over. And when you look at it now, you'll see, well, he wasn't really that close. I mean, he was close, but it wasn't like he was right at the goal line. But from where we're sitting, we saw him reaching out with the ball. I remember Jim Thomas saying it, everyone else was like, did he get in? Did he get in? Did he get in? And then you saw the referee. That's it. And the Rams were the world champions. Amazing. And I'll never forget that Super Bowl parade. I rode in, I was assigned to do a column on Georgia Frontier, who brought the team to St. Louis, and remember sitting in the convertible that she was in and just kind of watching the way she was just treated and her emotional response to the whole day and the way the crowd was treating her great. And I remember it was just really a memorable scene. Again, surreal. Wait a minute. I'm in St. Louis, in downtown St. Louis, and a team representing our city just won the Super Bowl? What? What? Really? Yeah, it happened. And there were some other good years to come. You know, if you look at St. Louis, I probably want to close on this. This is why we should always appreciate the greatest show on turf. And we shouldn't let the fact that some bad people conspired to move the team out of St. Louis, right? We shouldn't let that restrain our affection and our gratitude to the men, the players, and the woman, Georgia Frontier, who made that incredible, magical season and that incredible 3 years of all these points, 33 a game. Those people did not move the Rams out of St. Louis. Those people did not have corrupt relocation rules. So we should always treasure the memories of that team because it really was, pardon the cliche, but it really was a once in a lifetime adventure, experience, fairy tale, totally unforeseen. And this matters because between the football Cardinals and the Rams, we had an NFL team in St. Louis for 49 seasons. Only 8 of the 49 teams made it to the postseason. I'm not counting one of those stupid playoff bowls because that was not an elimination. They had this thing in the 60s, like the second best team. In each conference in the NFL, they would meet and play this thing called the playoff bowl, except it wasn't a playoff bowl. It meant nothing. It was an exhibition. But only 8 of those 49 teams made the playoffs when we're talking about elimination playoff games. 8 out of 49. And then the other thing, only 16 teams out of the 49 had a record above 500. So as I mentioned, you know, Air Coryell, Jim Hart, I mean, those teams were exciting and they were fun and they were, you know, innovative and brought things to the NFL from an offensive creativity standpoint because of Don Coryell. It was magical times. I was not here, but I know all about that history because I got immersed in it once I moved to St. Louis, and my friend Randy Carrick will talk about that with you for hours. And then the Rams came and there was a 5-year period. You know, they made the playoffs in 1999 through 2004, they made the playoffs in all but one of those seasons, I think. And they won 6 postseason games and they lost 4. But those are the only 6 postseason games that one of our NFL teams won. And that's my point. If you remember, I know a lot of you were around or a lot of you were young, but you remember, or maybe you remember, you know, your grandparents, your uncles, your aunts, your grandmother. I mean, people that may be, I hope not, but may not be with us these days. And you just you remember the excitement at that time, the thrills they provided. And it was really, I speak on behalf of many of you. It was one of the greatest thrills of our sports lifetime. And I'm saying that as the proverbial grizzled sports writer, sportscaster person who's grouchy, right? That team will always be in my heart. So the Cardinals, I give them credit. Saturday, September 21st, they're going to honor the greatest show on turf, Rams. They're going to have autograph sessions with Torrey Holt, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Mike Martz, Mike Jones, Ricky Prohl, a bunch of 1999 Rams players will be there, including Ernie Conwell, Andy McCollum, Tom Newton, Billy Jenkins, Adam Timmerman, Ryan Tucker, Roland Williams, Tony Horn. That's the other thing. They had a great kickoff returner, Tony Horn, in 1999. And there's other names, too. So just go to Cardinals.com. You can find out more about it. But that's a 6:15 game against the Guardians that night. And with that note, I will have more Greatest Show on Turf stories to tell during this season, the 25th anniversary season. I feel old. I can't believe it's been 25 years, but gosh, the memories are fantastic. That'll do it for now. Thanks for hanging in with me at 35 minutes of story time. But an extraordinary season like that deserves some really good conversation reviewing exactly how all this happened. What a blissful memory it is. That'll do it. Have a great night.